Hello and welcome back to the Epic Investor Podcast. My name is James Morrell and I'm here today with Rich Jarvis and Jason Morris. And if you've ever felt behind or overwhelmed with building wealth, today's episode is for you because it's about the power of momentum and compound growth and how small investing actions can lead to big financial freedom in the future. Let's dive in. So I'm here this morning with Rich Jarvis and Jason Morris. Guys, how are we doing today?
Doing great. Great to be here.
Great to be here.
Looking forward to this one.
Me as well. Yeah, today's a super exciting topic to discuss. We're talking about what we call unlocking the compound effect through investing. And I have a personal story I want to share about this, but I wanted to open just by sharing that investing, it's not about, you know, predicting the next peak or avoiding the next dip. I mean, it's oftentimes about just simply being in the market, trying to time your entry or exit. Can oftentimes mean missing on big opportunities or big upside because it can happen when you least expect it. And so I think, you know, by committing your capital to an investment, staying invested and letting your money work for you, you know, relying on both patience and compounding to do the heavy lifting can make a huge difference in the long run. And before I share my story, I wanted to share a little blurb that oftentimes time in the market beats timing the market. I'll say it one more time. Time in the market oftentimes can be timing the market. So with that, I wanted to share a personal story of mine. You guys, I'm sure, are familiar as our audience is with NVIDIA stock. In 2021, I bought into NVIDIA, and between 2021 and 2023, they were up about 300 or 400%. So obviously a great position to be in. But I'm kind of thinking, well, that's maybe too good to be true. Who knows what the future might actually hold with this? I'll sell and maybe I'll buy back it later on when things crash. And so I did just that. And quite a few people I know did just that. And as we all know, NVIDIA, since that day I sold, pretty much has gone up another 900,000 or whatever percentage. It's incredible growth. And so while I did take advantage of the compound effect by, you know, staying in for a few years and continually investing, I missed out on a massive, massive upside that I would have participated in if I had just relied on being consistent and buying into the longer term picture. I missed out on that compound growth. So this is something that I think most people can probably relate to on some level. I'd love to hear your personal stories, either personal or professional, on how you've seen the compound effect in your own life, or if you've seen someone else miss out on it like me. One story I'll pick on Rich first is that he shared a story about a wealth manager with a portfolio of homes that went from 220 down to 70 per home. And they allowed their fear, obviously, and you'll explain more detail, their fear to cause an exit, which, looking back on it now, they've missed out on massive, massive gains over time. So you don't mind sharing that story? Anything else? We'll start with that.
We were talking about fear and greed. He goes, yeah, I have personal experience in that. His portfolio at the peak, each of the homes that were in that portfolio were worth probably about $220,000. And then with the market crash, you know, with 08, 09, and then I think 10 was the low point for them, the average value was at 70. And what was interesting is the investors at that point, you know, the KPIs they were interested in looking at was just what, you know, that point in time. And they said, if we don't sell now, we'll lose everything. It's going to go away. And so they forced a sale. And his comment was, you know, just even a few years later, how many of those investors who forced the sell at 70,000 would have loved to own every single one of those at $220,000 in value? And the answer is every single one, without a doubt.
Yeah, no, it's scary that the things you can miss out on because of that fear complex and trying to time things out. So,
you know, I keep going back and forth between, but how could you know? Hindsight's 20/20. You know, all of those justifying reasons for doing what you did or what the sellers did. And then I think of like The Big Short. I think there's a movie or something like that, but it's basically about, you know, the whole economic blow up that happened on those, on the housing notes that were created. And because somebody knew their numbers and could project and see far enough into the future and could predict what was going to happen, he could take a calculated risk. Big one, right? Massive. But the other one I think of is Dana White and the UFC. His company is worth billions, and I think he paid single digit millions for it. And again, it's around the whole timing concept of when's a good time to get out of the industry, when's a good time to get in it. And I think at the end of the day, when I think of this, you know, and James, I really liked what you said about timing in the market. You do have to know what your long-term plan is, right? If you're looking for the quick hit, then yeah, put it on black. But if you're going to play the long game in investing, you do need to have consistent and stable vehicles that can produce those returns. And, it obviously protects you at the same time.
Well, that's a good point, Jason, because it brings up the topic that compounding interest is different than playing the market. It just is. A lot of times you hear these kids, if someone could put money in and save it early on in life in their teenage years, and even put a little bit more in their 20s, and then stop putting it in, when they get to 65, they'll have a significant amount. If someone waited until they're 30 to start, they would have to put money in every single year, and it still wouldn't be the same amount because of that compounding effect at that time. And it's the adage, time is money, is understated. Time is everything.
Well, I love that. I think one of the core points here is just understanding how these small decisions can lead to really big outcomes over time, and understanding that it requires consistency and it requires patience to accomplish this. It kind of reminds me, you guys have probably heard this, where they ask you, would you rather have $1 million today, or would you rather have a penny today? And that penny will double in value every day for the next 30 days. People jump to the million really quickly because I guess it just, sounds nice. But if you follow that trend line, the penny that doubles in value every single day for 30 days will be worth $5.5 million in 30 days. And a lot of that growth happens right at the end in the final 5 days between day 25 and day 30.
What day did they get halfway there? 29th. So when you're looking at that compound effect, halfway there is the day before. My preference is starting with the million and having that double every day for 30 days. That's where I would prefer to start. But
yeah, on day 25, you're at 167,000. So it's just crazy how in those final 5 days, you go from 167,000 to 5.5 million. But that clearly represents and illustrates the power of compound effect, but it has to be in play and be consistent, right? If you're like me and the NVIDIA you pulled out of the market, you would have missed the upside, right?
What a powerful visualization. I wish we could show that on a graph. Like the bell curve happens at the very last minute, right? Like
exactly.
That's wild.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the same case with other things too, right? I mean, it's all about consistent action in your life, whether it's we've talked in other episodes about your diet or the gym or your relationships, but just doing those things once or twice isn't going to get you the end result. It's about being consistent, tracking your progress over time, and really committing to a longer term picture versus just, oh, well, I did this once and now I expect a big upside. You can miss out on a lot of opportunities if you're not consistent.
And you can apply the compounding effect in your life, whether it's fitness, whether it's with your investments, whether it's with in your business, all of those, that compounding effect applies.
No, it's relevant to everything. So, as this relates to what we do, what are the core opportunities that you guys see, how you can unlock the compound effect as it relates to real estate and private equity? I mean, for me, what comes to mind is you have passive real estate investments that can create the compound effect. There's cash flow opportunities, there's appreciation, there's tax benefits, and you can reinvest distributions that you've made. And one deal leads to another, right? And you see this snowball build over, it's not the first year, the second year, but by the time you're year 3, 4, 5 and 10 and 20, as we mentioned, that's where you really unlock the true power of this. In your guys' experience, is there any other examples of how you've seen people unlock the compound effect outside of what I mentioned with tax benefits or cash flow or appreciation? What else comes to mind for you guys, if anything?
I've been involved in several acquisitions where there have been multiple investors involved. There's not a single deal that looks identical to another one. Every acquisition, I imagine real estate's the exact same way. Every project is a little bit different. But in the acquisitions I've been a part of, there have been anywhere from 5 to 12 investors involved. at varying levels. Some are in at 50,000 and others are in at 500,000. You can almost feel it. It's tangible when an investor gets the return on their money. You know, if they put in $50,000, the project it sees its term. We sell the company, they get their $50,000 back, and then they get their proceeds, like you were talking about. And instead of, you know, keeping those or going and buying a boat or going and, you know, taking a huge family trip, they put it right back in, right? And now it's you know, house money, where they can then take that money and the compound effect is that they can put that in one or even two and maybe three deals. And now their bell curve in life looks more like a hockey stick. And they're, you know, now they're creating generational wealth in that vehicle. And I think real estate's the exact same. It can be the same vehicle for them, but that's just what I've seen in business. And it's amazing when I still remember this, where you deliver the check to the investor and they just push it right back and say, go do it again, right? It's like they get the power of it. They don't want the cash. They don't want the money sitting there doing nothing. They want it to be working.
Some of the things that I've seen is, I think, understanding that there's different categories to put your money into. You have some that are just going to be out continually growing, something that's contractually guaranteed to do what it says it's going to do. Then you have money over here that's kind of a potential upside. And I think what's important is people need to realize that if you have, let's say you just had an X percent, let's just say 10% growth over a period of 20 years, and you had 1 year of loss in that 20-year period, does it matter which year you had the loss in? And the answer is no. If you have a loss in the second year of 30%, you know, that's, as far as the dollar amount, that's much different than having a 30% loss that 20th year, right? But when you add all of them up, and at the end of the day, the end result is exactly the same. So it's compounding effect also is preventing the losses.
Well, I think Warren Buffett also said at one point that he's held on to everything forever, it seems like. And he said if he had sold, he would be not even close to the amount that he's worth at this point in time. So just goes to show, committing to that big picture and staying consistent and patient, it does pay off.
He made a comment. He said, if everyone had a punch card for every financial decision that they made, and you only get 20 in your entire life, and once you've made that 20th decision, you're done. You can't make any more financial decisions. He said most people would become far more wealthier than they are today, and they would never use their 20.
Right. Only focusing on crucial decisions that'll make a long-term impact versus buying today, selling tomorrow, buying the next day, right? And that's actually a great segue into the next point on this. I was wanting to talk about like the habits or the kind of the mindset or persona that a person needs to have or needs to assume to be able to unlock the compound effect. Like, what kind of habits do you have to have? Obviously, what comes to mind for me is you have to be patient. You have to be consistent, as we've discussed, and commit to the bigger picture. And even when things aren't going well, it's known that concept of fear and greed and market cycles and not letting fear in the market dictate your decisions. But does anything else come in mind for you guys as far as, you know, what kind of habits or persona should you have when it comes to, you know, investing long term and doing what you can to unlock that compound effect?
The thing that comes to my mind, it's likely extremely simple. And that's, if you are in the habit of monthly putting money into investments somewhere, whether that's, you know, the vehicle that you've chosen or the five vehicles that you're involved in, the portfolio, but the habit is, you know, I'm putting money there every month, whatever that number is, that for me also builds a little bit of confidence and stability behind something can go wrong, but I'm still going to continue to invest in something, right? You can pivot. If a project didn't go the way you wanted to, you have other vehicles that are in, and the habit is simply, I'm investing in my future. I'm investing in, you know, retirement. I'm investing in opportunities for my kids. For me, that's the simple habit of that. That's the framework, right? I expect it every month. I'm not living on 100% of my income. I'm living on 50 or 60% because the rest of it's working for me.
No, that's excellent. I think that the simple habit is spend less than you make, period. And that consistent saving is massive.
And for those who, you know, maybe don't have as much money, that's one of the common reasons why those or why people sometimes don't choose to invest or get involved in the market. And then as a result, they don't unlock the compound effect. It's the idea that they don't have enough. Are they, you know, where do they start or how do I start? But I think the answer to that question really is that you just need to start. You have, as I mentioned at the start of the episode, you've got to get in. You've got to commit to that consistent investment. And only through that over time will you be able to unlock the compound effect. Because one investment itself into, it could be a stock or anything else, I mean, that may grow, but it's the multiplying effect of continually investing in something and seeing that compound over time. So what would you guys say to people who, you know, maybe they feel they don't have the capital or resources to unlock the compound effect? Is it just kind of what I said? Is it just start, just get in?
The first thing I tell people, one, is that I'm not a wealth advisor, so I can't give them investment advice, right? That's the first thing I tell them. And then depending on where they're at, I will connect them with those relationships of trust that are wealth advisors that can take them through the whole, you know, their models. But when it comes down to just the principles, you know, it's, if someone is living paycheck to paycheck, they do not have any savings, no emergency fund, that's a completely different scenario of putting money aside than someone who has all of their expenses covered by investment dollars. And no matter whether they work or not, their expenses are, they don't have to worry about those expenses. Those are two different sides, right? And so I think starting with the one that, you know, is living paycheck to paycheck, I think there's a hierarchy of needs. You know, you need to get that emergency fund built up. And that's where you start. You just put, if it's $10, $5, $20, $100, it doesn't matter. Put it aside into that account. And when you start having that emergency fund, then it gives you some, not only confidence, but it's a different mindset than when you don't. And then from there, either you're benefiting from the compounding effect or you're losing because of the compounding effect. And those that are in debt are essentially slaves to that principle. And until they get out of that arena, they will constantly be fighting a battle that is virtually unwinnable unless they pay it off. So if they're going paycheck to paycheck and they're laden with debt, the first thing they have to do is get that emergency fund in place, and then everything goes to get rid of all that debt, right? And then from there, what do? Is you build your protections, your strategy. And, you know, I think people have it upside down. You know, so many times I hear wealth managers or people talk about, you know, the concept of you're young, you have time to recover, so put money in a higher risk environment. And then, you know, they talk to those who are approaching retirement and they do the opposite. They're like, well, no, you're close to retirement, you got to pull all the risk back. And I think that's entirely backwards. The only reason you'd put money at risk is because you have a foundation that's solid. It's guaranteed contractually. This is what you have. And it gives you permission to put money at risk. Can you imagine what would happen if every kid put their savings aside, and even if it just grew at 6%, 7%, 8%, whatever, just a solid, just getting that foundation in place where they never lost money until they were 50, 60 in that. And then from there, it switches. You have permission to put additional resources at risk in an upside. So it's just a different, I think, philosophy to think through. And I think your savings and your contractual investments give you permission to put other resources at risk.
Well, I wanted to dive a little bit deeper on that, Rich, if I can, and talk a little bit more about habits. If, you know, a lot of people are in debt, a lot of people are trying to crawl out of debt, and I'm not exactly sure what their plan or strategy might be, but you know, the thought is often, well, why am I going to save money when I'm in debt? And, you know, I'm not motivated to pay off debt because it sucks and there's no return. But I think when you kind of step out of that fog and you look at it this way, what excites me when we buy a business and I know that I've got a $60,000 monthly payment, principal and interest payment to a bank or to an investment plan, I get excited about the future when that's no longer due. But but we've trained the business to make that payment every single month, right? It's on auto payment, right? The 14th of every month, $60,000 is going to go to the debt, right? Well, along the way, you get aggressive, you reduce your costs, your expenses, you try to increase some revenue so that you can take the delta and slam the debt, so you're paying down the principal. And now you're creating a habit of we're paying down debt, we're paying down the principal, but every single month I'm paying off $60,000 so that in 3 years, instead of taking 10 years, in 3 years when that's off, the business is in the habit of paying out $60,000 in debt. It can continue to do that. Now, guess who gets that money? That now goes to the owners, the any equity owners, anybody that's there gets to participate. And now instead of it going to pay off debt, now it's going into your pocket. You could do that in life, right? If I've got $10,000 of credit card debt, get your emergency fund put in so the stress is gone. Get into the habit of this is a debt payment. It's going away, but then don't stop it. Now it's an investment payment. Now you're putting money into investment vehicles, and the compound effect will absolutely have the hockey stick feel to it when you're out of that debt and you're now growing generational wealth.
I love that. There's another principle too. Have you ever heard the phrase or something to the effect of, I want to pay cash so I don't have a monthly payment?
Yeah.
You heard that before? Now look, I'm all for paying cash, but if you pay cash, you better have a monthly payment. And here's why. If I go to a bank today and I say, you know, I really could use some cash to buy this, whatever. And look, I'm a nice guy. I've been working hard. Would you just give me the money so I could just pay cash and then not charge me any interest? Would that be okay? What would the bank say?
You're in the wrong place, pal.
Why do you think they would say no way? Why? Why would they say you can't have that money? Because there's value in that money. But why is there value on that money that they're giving you?
Because it's something, they're affording you an opportunity that wouldn't otherwise exist without it, right?
Right. Well, and they also understand how money works, and they're getting money to work for them, right? So if you pay cash, you essentially put the banker hat on, and you're saying those that pay cash and not pay themselves back with a monthly payment, but what effectively that they're doing is they're saying that their cash has no value. Now, if it had value, then they would say, look, if I'm going to pay cash for that, in the current rates are 8% or whatever it might be, then I need to make sure I'm replacing that at 8% every single month, because that money has value. But if someone just pays cash and then never replaces it and puts it back, they've just devalued their money.
Perspective, man. That's great perspective. Cash is king. And if it's not growing, then even if you pay cash for anything, right? You need to have a conversation with Dave Ramsey, Rich.
He's got a lot of great points.
I love Dave Ramsey, and I'm not bashing on him, but you know, the concept there of paying cash for everything can be good, but not if you rob your future, rob your opportunity for compound interest and compound growth.
No, I love that. Lots of great ideas circulating here, and I hope this episode has been helpful for our audience. There's plenty to take in. If anything, remember my story about trying to time things. You know, it's all about playing a bigger picture role, being patient, being consistent with your investing. Because if you're not, you could be like me and miss out on a massive upside that I missed out in 2 years ago. But lesson learned, right? We learned from our lessons. So I hope this episode has been beneficial for our audience. If it has been, please do like, subscribe, and share. And we'll see you guys next time.